Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can download the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
My company, as he is every Tuesday and Friday here on the program, he's the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. New episode available now. Download, like, subscribe. You know the drill there. Also, VSiN's Betting Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 9 a.m. Central Time. You can see him on VSiN Primetime. Download the VSiN Watch app on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
What is happening, sir?
So I was having this thought last night. Is there a bigger bummer than when we reach that point of the calendar where you know at most you're having one game per night and you can tell pretty quickly how that one game is going? I mean, I do know we had Duke and Murray State actually was an interesting game, but I also acknowledge not everybody's watching that. I don't know. I'd be interested to see if more people locally watched are watching the Stanley Cup Finals or watched Monday night college baseball. But the fact that, you know, maybe there were some Ole Miss fans. I don't know. You tell me. I can only, George, you can chime in on this. I can only tell you what my Ole Miss fan wife is doing. And as soon as Ole Miss got beat, she didn't want to watch any college baseball. I don't know, last night, like, are Ole Miss fans rooting for Murray State since they knocked them out and now that they're in the World Series?
I was kind of just watching from afar. I was definitely a lot more locked in on the Stanley Cup Finals,
yep.
But that's just me.
But it just, I don't know, I feel like you quickly get to that point where you recognize, oh boy, with the schedule this limited, we cannot really afford to have blowouts.
Yeah, that was, I was certainly taken aback, and I guess we should have anticipated something like that to happen, considering what we saw in the first two games, as they were epic, going to overtime, comebacks late in them. You know, when it got to 2-1, when Corey Perry scored that early goal in the second period, I'm like, maybe we. And then, what, within a minute,
yeah,
the
I think
Panthers
you
went up 3-1. I was like, oh, okay.
And then, like, you blinked, and I don't know. Like, I was also having this thought, which was, when you see a team like Edmonton, like, was last night the night that they broke? Because I understand playing Florida probably drives you insane. But, like, I felt for the most part in games 1 and 2, they largely kind of stayed out of it. Like, we know Florida's going to hit the late cheap shot. Like, yeah, I'm not defending what they're doing. But it felt like there was a concerted effort to be above that in the first two games. And then I wondered last night, it's like, oh man, did they just break? Like, and you saw that in real time? Or can you make the argument that, hey man, that game was going a particular way, like they were just going to take out their frustration? Like, we'll get in the mud with you.
Yeah, there was a whole lot of fighting. I'll say this, and I know George is more astute on hockey, I would say, than the two of us, but that game, what, we had 8 penalties in like the first period? I mean, it feels like that's just the way this series has
I mean,
been
I don't feel
so
like, George, you tell me, because you're watching way more frequently, that's the first time I've noticed that on the graphics they put up penalty minutes. Like, they were tracking how much ice time was missed by players. Like, that to me was like, okay, that's kind of a sign of where this one's headed.
That's not a normal occurrence. Honestly, when I got done watching the first period we were in the intermission, that's kind of where I was mostly concerned with a team like Edmonton. Florida's totally fine playing that style of kind of gross, disjointed, choppy hockey. Edmonton's a lot more about their flow. I mean, they need to really get into their type of game for their offense to kind of get it together. And as we saw, it never really did. I mean, that type of first period doesn't happen. The fact that by the end of the game we had how many total penalty minutes in the game?
So, I mean, the one point I was tracking was like 73 to 51. So what's that, 124? I can't remember if there was another power play. It felt like...
By the end of it, they were starting to sling out the 10-minute misconducts. So kind of got interesting there. I think I want to say it was the most penalty minutes in a game since...
I mean, I can't remember a Stanley Cup final game that had 3 fights going on simultaneously.
21 penalties, 85 penalty minutes.
For Edmonton.
No,
that's just the Oilers.
That's just the Oilers?
Yeah. Florida had 14 penalties and 55 penalty minutes.
Yeah, because at one point I was tracking, it was like 73-51 or something like that. And so, to George's point.
Oh, okay, there it is, yep.
They tacked on a few 14 more.
14 or 55 for Florida.
The only reason I bring up that, it's not to delve too much on hockey, but like, what are we doing not having a game tonight? So I guess it's the NBA's fault because... Yeah,
that travel's not nearly as bad.
Well, and in fairness, like, hey, I think they do set their schedule
early.
They've
had this stupid schedule forever.
Yeah,
and that's the problem. I'll say this. Like, Look, I wanted an NBA game on Saturday night as bad as anybody. I totally get it. They should tweak it, but it felt like a rinse repeat every year. Why don't we have a game on Saturday? I don't know, but that's just the way they do it. And guess what, folks? We're not going to have an NBA game this weekend either because their schedule is Wednesday, Friday, Monday. So I'm not saying it's right. I don't like it.
No.
But it is. But it's just unfortunately it's been this way forever. And I do wonder. And I can't think off the top of my head, but now that TNT and ESPN are kind of in cahoots, they are not going to have a game simultaneously, right?
Fine with that. I guess the problem is, so it
we
seems
should,
like
look, we should have a game tonight, and that's why, like, to be honest, man, like, finals time is like a little overrated because we get these lulls, like. When it's the Western when it's the conference finals, it's tremendous because we're getting Eastern and Western in hockey, Eastern and Western in the NBA, and it's every night. It's just rolling, boom, 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 boom. And then once we get to the championships, you just have these weird lulls of a Tuesday night where we've got nothing.
Well, and I think you tell me if you agree with this. I feel like another aspect of this is I understand this series is heading back to Indiana 1-1. But don't you feel like a big problem is we acknowledge Indiana had a great close to game one, but it's like when you look at the totality of the two games that have played, it feels like one team's significantly better than the other.
Yeah, and when I was, you know, we were on the air Friday, and the Pacers kind of got that, wow, they did it again, right? And rightfully so. And I'm not trying to go down that road where I'm diminishing the accomplishments of the Pacers. I think, at least to me, they've proven that they deserve to be in the NBA Finals, and I think that is a fair assessment. But even after game one, I said, Thunder's still going to win this thing. I don't know how many games it's going to be. And I'll just say this. I don't know if you agree or not. you better win game three. I get a sneaky suspicion. If the Thunder take care of business tomorrow night, this puppy is going to wrap on Monday night in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and like I was thinking about that question, because why do I feel the way that I do? Well, A, I thought Oklahoma City's been, if not the best team, but...
Oklahoma City, if you think back to game one, like let's dissect it real quick.
Yeah.
The Pacers led for, what, 0.5 seconds?
0.3.
0.3 seconds. Tyrese Halliburton really didn't play all that well. He had 14 points, but he's becoming this remarkably clutch player who, whether it is this is going to be the totality of his career where he's going to be one of the clutchest players ever, or if it's just a weird stretch in the postseason, more than likely, probably somewhere in the middle. But someone tweeted me, and I think it was more of a, maybe it was from your burner account.
I do not have one. I would admit it. I don't.
It was more of a like a LeBron hater. It was like, I think this just proves Halliburton, hands down, more clutch than LeBron. I'm like, define clutch. Okay, so he's hit some big shots. Being down 3-2 and going for 45-15-5 on the road in Boston in 2012 when everyone basically has said you're can't live up to the moment. I don't know. It's kind of a clutch moment there. Like I think I
would also say this, as unbelievable as Halliburton has been, is there any play that remotely stacks up with the chase down block in game 7 of the 2016 finals?
Right.
As awesome as these shots have been, and they're awesome, and I'm glad that I've gotten to watch them.
And I'm not trying, but like Tyrese Halliburton, I hate that it divulges into this, like, is he a superstar? I think Tyrese Halliburton is a star.
The problem is, what is the definition of superstar? That's
the
real problem.
There is no definition of superstar. It's what you make of it, right? And it's when you make these lists and, you know, who do you put in front of him? He's been phenomenal this postseason. He's had some insane games. Like, the game 4 against the Knicks in Indiana was unbelievable. What was it, like 35-15-12 or whatever he went for? I mean, it was remarkable. And the shots that he's made, the clutch moments that he's had, but he's got to play better, man. Like, and that's, and Rick Carlisle even said that. And that's where I'm really curious about tomorrow night.
Well, that's
honestly, are we going to get, like, we recognize that the Thunder are the best defensive team in the NBA, and they are by a lot, right? But if you're a superstar, fair or not, you kind of have to rise up against that and be like, all right, I gotta figure this thing out. And I'm not saying he won't, but yeah, for Tyrese Halliburton, like, he's got to do more if they want to have a chance to win this series. And I'm hopeful that he does. Like, I really am. I think he's going to have a big game tomorrow. But I think the curiosity is he going to press it too much? Is he going to try to be not who he is? Because if you listen to, I think it was maybe Russillo and Simmons. I can't remember. One of the Ringer podcasts that they go in depth. And they were talking about usage rates. And like, his usage rate is like nowhere close to, you know, what you would expect from, you know, a superstar.
I think, honestly, the reason why I, like, obviously I enjoy watching sports, so I'm going to watch it. But the reason why I'm not that hopeful for Indiana is I don't think his struggles are lack of assertiveness. I don't think that it's, feeling it out and, like, waiting. Like, I think they present a real matchup problem for him.
I agree.
Because he is a true point guard, but he also is not an elite, like, deep shooter. And so we kind of see this with Ja. Like, you have to be able to get into the paint. And I, unlike Ja, who actually kind of was able to get into the paint a decent amount against them because he's just so freaking quick, that's not really Halliburton. And so I keep trying to decide, like, if it's being unfair to Indiana, because the reality is, if you would have said at the start of this series is going to head to Indianapolis, tied at a game apiece, I think everyone in the Indiana organization would have said, we will take that.
Sure, absolutely.
I still
And it almost felt that way a little bit on Sunday night.
Sure.
Like, where they were like, all right.
But then, like, I don't know, I guess the problem that I keep having is, do I think Halliburton can go off and have an unbelievable game? Well, yeah, I think he's a very good player. Do I think he can do it three more times? That's where I'm really struggling.
I think it, to me, right now, barring injuries, obviously, it feels inevitable the Thunder are going to win. And now the question really is, in how many games? And I think that's what we're all kind of contemplating, except for folks, I'm sure, in Indianapolis. I just have, and I said this before the series, I had a hard time envisioning how the Pacers beat this team four times. And I said the same thing about the Knicks heading into that Celtics series. And obviously I was wrong. And it doesn't even include the Tatum injury, right? I don't know how the Pacers pull it off, because let's be real about game one. That was a double-digit lead. That was a 15-point lead. I mean, they were keeping them at arm's distance. Now, they didn't put the hammer down, yep. Right? They kept the cockroach alive. They could not exterminate them, and ultimately they did what they've done throughout the postseason, and that's a real skill that this Pacers team has, and they have some elite shooters. And now, here's the thing where I'm not ultra-confident saying that the Pacers are just going to go quietly into the night, because they are a really good shooting team, and we saw that in game one, right? They shot like 45%.
No, I mean, I was
going
to say, basically to me, if you're asking me what is their path to winning three more games, to me it is as simple as they have to have three games in the final five that they shoot 40% or better from three?
Yeah, I would say almost like 45%.
And again, it's not impossible, but that would be
possible.
The odds would say that's unlikely, but do I think that it's impossible? No, because I'm not asking them to do it for the course of the series, but I am saying there have to be three games where they basically have to shoot 45% or better from three.
Well, and that's why, I mean, look, if this is the NCAA tournament, that's why we see upsets happen all the time. That's why ultimately in the NBA, we talked about it prior to the series starting. If you go back in history and you look at teams that are as big of underdogs as the Indiana Pacers, I believe there were 16 teams that were, from a betting standpoint, plus 250 or longer underdogs, and only one had won, and that was
the Pistons
in 2004. And outside of that, they all lost in six or fewer games. Like, were there a moment or two where those underdogs rose up? Absolutely. But that's the challenge about the NBA, is that it's hard to do this. Now, the Pacers did it once, and they could do it again because that's who they are, and they're really skilled and a really good shooting team. And if they can, you know, limit the turnovers like they did in the second half, I think, I mean, honestly, man, you look at the second half, I believe the stats were, I think they were 10 of 20 from three in the second half of game one.
And I think they were 6 of 10 in the fourth alone.
And I think they had just 5 turnovers.
And I think those five turnovers led to like 4 points.
Right, and that's where, like, the more I dug into game one and what happened, I ultimately came to the conclusion, in my opinion, that even though the Pacers turned the ball over 25, 26 times, the fact that they were so inefficient off of those turnovers, the Thunder, and the fact that they gave up corner threes at a 60% clip, 10 of 16, whatever that.
Yeah, I don't have
five of eight.
I could look it up. There's a lot of, on the NBA tracking, that would take me 5 minutes to look it up.
So I came to the conclusion that even though the Pacers won and they deserve credit for winning, I thought they would lose game two. They obviously did. And I don't have much hope that they'll win this series, but could they win one in Indianapolis? Absolutely. I mean, That's the beauty of basketball. They've got really good players, and they've got great shot makers. And here's the thing, to their credit, man. I mean, I think they do have the better coach in Rick Carlisle over Daigneault, even though I feel like it's kind of been like crapping on Daigneault season. I don't think he's a bad coach. I thought he made some questionable decisions in game one. But they've got dudes who just, I mean, Aaron Nesmith has had some moments this postseason where that dude clearly looks unfazed at moments, you know?
Okay, does this change our thoughts from Front Office Sports? The Pacers have renamed the streets around Gainbridge Fieldhouse after players before hosting the NBA Finals. So we have Halliburton Road Bryant Boulevard, Toppin Avenue, and Turner Lane. Also, I believe Caitlin Clark will be in the building for both the home games.
Does TJ McConnell have a name, a street?
From what I see from front office sports, no, but again, I'm not ruling it out.
The disrespect. Didn't we learn our lesson from the Knicks?
Tommy Bryant getting his own. Now, I mean, this is where...
Didn't Tyler Kolek get a street named after him in New York City?
Did he?
I think so.
Does he have one in Milwaukee?
He should.
Certainly on campus, at least, at Marquette, he should. I don't know. I guess I was kind of thinking about it in those terms. It's like, what is... Because George and I were talking about this over the weekend, and I don't know if you felt the same way. We had a pretty darn good weekend of sports, and because the finals game one was Thursday, the least interesting game to us was honestly game two. Like, I thought both tennis finals were better.
Oh, my God. I mean, dude, I know it's Tuesday. It's way after the fact. I couldn't turn my eyes away from set three on, man. That was some unbelievable stuff.
I mean, it was just unreal shot making and whatnot. Like, it was just a massive final. But then also, like, the day before with, you know, Sabalenka's meltdown and then claiming that even Iga would have beaten Coco that day. Like, that was electric. I still am pretty convinced that Spain-Portugal was like a made-up UEFA. We need to, like, sell some more tickets. Like, Nations Cup is not something I remember from the last 10 years ago.
I had a meeting. I had a meeting on
Sunday afternoon. Or was that Saturday? No. Was that Saturday?
I had a meeting on Thursday, and after the meeting wrapped up, we're just sitting down in the meeting room, and there was a TV on, and I was like, "Is this soccer game live?
Yeah, is this a replay from last year? What is this?"
And one of my colleagues at VSiN is from Britain. And he's like, yeah, it's kind of a made-up thing that they just were like, we have a lull. It's kind of like if you're a Simpsons fan, remember that episode where they had Love Day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where there was a dip in sales, so they had to make up a new holiday. It kind of felt like that from an untrained eye. And I think, I forget whatever who was playing on Thursday. I think Spain scored like 9 goals.
I think Spain beat France and then Portugal beat Germany?
It's pretty much a fake thing. I mean, UEFA founded the Nations League in 2018.
Like it sounded like what they were doing was they were trying to make more money off friendlies. And it made all the sense in the world to me that Portugal won because it's like, all right, that kind of comes down to like who cares the most?
Yeah, you're trying to. Yeah, if you're one of those countries that's like on the fringe, yeah, really good, but never can get over the top.
Correct, like that.
All
makes,
right, we're gonna focus on winning this one.
Yeah. Like Ronaldo left it all on the floor to win the Nations Cup.
This is a bad sports host. So Sunday was it a good final?
Was it Sunday or Saturday?
Sunday. It was a good final.
Yeah, because it was right after. Yeah, because that's what I flipped over to from tennis. It was a good final, but you could tell like. Spain has played, I don't know, 15 matches in the last 2 years that felt bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then you run into this problem of, and this is my fear for next year. Like, this is kind of, all right, let's wet the beak. Like, let's get kind of our national pride going up for Team USA as we're going to host the World Cup, and none of our players are playing. So, like, you know, like they've got another, they're getting ready to go to the Gold Cup. They got another tune-up, but they were wildly underwhelming against Turkey on Saturday. Played in the driving rainstorm of Connecticut. So, like, that really got the juices flowing. Also, I'm out on, I feel like I've sung a lot of Turner's praises from game broadcast. You can't just drop the... They spelled turkey like the T-U-R-K-Y-I-E. You can't just do that like out of nowhere. Like, wait, well, I was like, is this real turkey? Like, what is this, the B team? Like, what do we got here? Like, I don't know. So, like, I feel like this should be kind of getting fired up for the World Cup for next year. Like, this is why, like, historically the World Cup works. It's like during this lull when there's nothing going on, like, all right, it's something to watch, and it's got a lot of energy, a lot of passion, and it's gripping. This would be like in the Four Nations Cup, like Team USA, like none of the Kachucks play.
I'm just looking at the...
I think they play in Nashville tonight.
Yeah, we've got Lawrence tweeting us.
Switzerland.
Yeah, Lawrence has been tweeting us about Nations League was something UEFA and CONCACAF created in 2019.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, sounds about right.
It's like Spaceballs 2, the search for more money.
And, yeah, if we needed stuff to watch tonight, USA plays in Nashville tonight on TNT.
A tune-up for a random-ass tournament that we're a part of?
The Gold Cup.
Gold Cup is a fairly, like...
It's been around
by our
bit.
Standards of, like, we can be...
What were we in last summer?
That was the Copa, which is historically the South American tournament. But some soccer fan that's getting mad at me, I'm doing this from off the dome. I think it's every 4 years they invite teams from around the world and they go and play it at bigger stadiums to make more money. And so we were in that last year.
And we did not make it out of group play.
Correct.
I remember because I was on my journey across the country.
But we got Greg fired. You know, that's all that matters.
I was on my journey across the country, and I was like, all right. I was driving into, oddly enough, with the College World Series coming up, into Omaha. Got situated, had the beverages, had the food ready, had the TV all good to go. And I believe we got smoked by... Panama?
I believe that's correct. I think that game was in Atlanta because, like you, I think I was flying. I think you were driving across the country because I think that was when you were doing your trip back home with your dog. And I was actually flying to Vegas and I was on the layover in Denver and I was watching. And I was like, well, this seems bad.
This is not great.
Then you look up like historically, like, oh, yeah, this is bad. This is very bad.
Or was it the Bolivia game? It was one of the two. It was the one I don't remember.
The one that I'm specifically thinking of was they were playing in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's the Panama game.
At Mercedes, and we got like a red card late. Like, I think we needed to just tie to advance, and it literally was like the scene out of Ted Lasso when, you know, Ted doesn't believe in ties, and then someone tells him they'll advance if they tie, and he starts playing for a tie. Like, it really did feel like that, and I think we had a red card. And
all right, now I remember. This is riveting. I'm sorry. It was the Uruguay game. So it was after we lost to Panama. So it was going on at the same time. We needed Panama to lose to Bolivia, I believe.
Yeah.
And they
checks out. Yeah.
They like it, or tie them or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever it happened, we did not end up well.
There was like
that.
A concurrent result that could have helped us, and then we had a hope for like 90 seconds.
Right.
And then, like, someone scored right after that. But, like, this is, like, my whole thing with Team USA Soccer. It's like, I would like to get involved, but I feel like I watch the same issues with Team USA that I do, like, incompetent college football programs, where it's like, they keep blaming the coach, but I just always keep going, like, look at your systems in place. Who's hiring said coach?
I think it's always hilarious, and I'm not trying to crap on our national soccer team, because we've had some moments that were fun, right? Well, I think it was the Gold Cup 2 years ago in which we just obliterated Mexico.
That one was a blast. Also,
we got their coach fired, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's
I was at that game.
I'm pretty sure that's the Mexican Constitution, is if they lose to us in a certain type of competition, he's fired on the spot.
But we also
had the Pulisic goal, and then where he remember, then somebody stepped on his nuts. Like, he literally gave his left nut for his country. Like, that goal was awesome.
But I always laugh when this is what I hear all the time. Oh, you should just wait. You should just wait. The talent we've got, brew it. I mean, like, I've been hearing that for 20 years. Like, oh, the next crop of American soccer players, they're going to get us deep into the World Cup. And then it's kind of the same thing every single time.
Yeah, we're not bad.
No, we're fine.
It feels like, it feels like when we get into most of these competitions, we're usually ranked somewhere between like 15 and 20. And a decent amount of these tournaments, we make it to the knockout round, which is top 16, and then we lose. So we kind of finish about where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like,
we get our hopes up, like, oh, maybe this is the
golden
year.
Generation.
And then we all get fired up, and they're like, oh, no, wait, no, we're playing.
I think, honestly, what it is for me
is
like...
Was it Belgium? I think that was 20. That was the year I got married. Maybe the year after I got married.
Was that 2014?
I think it was 2014, because I got married in 2013. I remember we were watching, because I went to... Yeah, I went to... we played, I want to say, Ghana in the opener.
That sounds correct.
Them. And, yeah, it was fun. It was like, you know, it's what we like to do.
Well, we also forget the epic tie against England.
Oh, I remember that very well. I was in Mexico watching it in like some sort of bar hut down on a beach in Mexico. It was actually pretty cool.
Was it Belgium or the Dutch? I remember I was
the Dutch beat us in 06.
Well, there was one game where
this is terrible radio.
I was down in grad school.
This is awful.
Well, I was down in grad school, and like when you're in a college town, like in grad school, if you're not really like friends with the people in your program, you wind up just being friends with bartenders. That's a life lesson for you kids out there. So one of my buddies who's a big bartender, he's like a massive soccer fan, but he also played football at Idaho. And so when
shout
we
shout to the Kibbe Dome.
Correct. Shout out to the Kibbe. He played for Ericsson too. Turns out that guy was not a delight to play for. But we had, like, when we scored one of those epic goals, it's something that very few people can do. But if you're either a running back, a quarterback, but if you know how to, like, really jump into an offensive lineman's arms, it can look really cool. And we absolutely nailed it. Like, we were at this theater that was showing the game in front of everyone. Yeah, that's when you can actually have, like, the quarterback that knows how to jump into the lineman's arms and, like, they can kind of hoist you up. Fantastic moment. That's all I remember about that game.
I do remember one of the most viral soccer moments. I was doing a fill-in show in Portland, Oregon, and we were in the midst of qualifying for the 2018 World Cup.
Oh, is this the one we don't make it?
And we lost to Trinidad and Tobago. Yeah. And Taylor Twellman is on this like makeshift, I think it was like Sports Center on ESPN News. And I'm watching it, and for some odd reason, I'm watching this SportsCenter, and it's when he just loses his mind. He's like,
"The rant.
What are we doing?" I watched that in live time. I'm like, this is one of the best rants I've ever seen, because it wasn't manufactured. It was a dude who, you know, loves Team USA soccer more than most out there, and he's just losing his ever-living mind, being like, we just lost to Trinidad and Tobago with the chance to go to the World Cup. What the hell are we doing?
It's a fair question. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Tim has gotten the early digital copy of Phil Steele's preseason magazine. Always a big moment for all the college football fans out there. But we're going to take a specific look at what Phil thinks about the Memphis Tigers. And spoiler alert, he's pretty high on them. So we'll talk about that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company. 92.9 FM. Yes.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Colin Wilson of the Action Network is going to join us here in about an hour. We're going to preview the College World Series. The field is set after Murray State wins Game 3 against Duke last night. We've got the field set, so we'll get all that preview with him at 3:30. Tim Murray joining us here on the show, and I think Tim is listening to the Taylor Twellman rant.
I am.
Yeah.
It's so good. It is so good. How good it was.
It's funny that you mention, like, it wasn't on a real sports center. And it's like, I remember having it on a side TV, and it's like, I don't know if I was watching a game or something that went off, and I just looked up, was like, Taylor's, like, going off. And then
it was Max Bretos and Taylor Twellman at 10 o'clock Eastern. So, you know, normal sports center's 11, right? So it was, it might have been ESPN News, it might have been E2, but to your point, it wasn't the main set. It was this little, like, corner set, but it was right after the game ended.
It looked like a closet that you would, like, mistakenly go into in Bristol.
And it is, I mean, I remember watching, be like, wow, that was really good. And this is the first time I've gone back and watched the whole thing.
Oh, he was cooking with gas.
It is unreal. And it's all unscripted. It's all pure passion. It's not this fake crap that you get in the mornings. And I get it. Like, it's hard to get fired up every morning. And you got producers, hey, you should say this about, you know. They Old Takes Exposed put up the takes prior to Game 6 in 2012 when they said that the Heat season is a failure. They're going to blow everything up. This is just pure adrenaline passion from someone remarkably passionate
about the subject.
Yeah. About the subject. I mean, it is all time. It goes for 7+ minutes. And to be honest, if it's on normal SportsCenter, they probably cut it. But because it's ESPN News, it's kind of like Animal House. It's like, just let him go, man.
He's rolling.
He's cooking. So it's really good. And good for ESPN. They put it up on ESPN Throwback. So just put in Taylor Twellman, what are we doing? And it comes right up. Full 7 minutes, HD. It's not someone, you know, getting it off of their phone. No. ESPN was like, oh, yeah, we're putting this bad boy up there.
That was tremendous. We've also gotten news. Aaron Rodgers is married now, apparently.
Is he? Oh, yeah. I did see his. He did have a.
He's been wearing the ring, but he confirmed that he's been married a couple of months today at training or whatever, OTAs. We'll get into some OTAs during the list because, man, every time you kind of want to buy into the Bengals, like, then the Bengals just do stuff and you're like, man, they're just so tough to take seriously. Like, as a real organization, it's more of like,
are we going to look back and we talk more about this top of the hour? And maybe this is going to be a hot take. I don't know. Are we going to look back and say Joe Burrow was completely wasted?
I mean, I told you I had my fear last fall that Burrow's going to be Dan Marino.
I mean, they were right there. If not for Matthew Stafford playing sandlot football with Cooper Kupp at the end of the Super Bowl, they're right there winning a Super Bowl.
If literally they get just a hand on Donald because Jamar Chase was breaking free and they were going to go deep. I mean, like, it's, I mean, Marino's first Super Bowl. Remember, he got there and everyone's like, oh, he'll be back. He was not. Spoiler alert. We've also got Phil Steele's. So we don't have the hard copy available yet. I believe those have gone to press. I think Phil put that out. I think they went to press last weekend, but we do have the digital copies, and Tim has secured a copy, and we've got the AAC. And I think what's interesting about the AAC is the Tigers are in this kind of weird spot where emotionally kind of the fan base geared up for last year and last year being the run because you had your quarterback returning. He was a senior. You'd kind of built for that. What I kept saying, what I think is kind of weird about this, though, is it takes a little bit of time for your team to have more money than the competition to kind of really set in. But that's kind of where I think Memphis is, where the fan base isn't really maybe as locked in building up for this year. But I think Phil would agree, from a roster perspective, Memphis is, if not the best team in this league, the second best team in the league.
So Phil Steele has them number one. And if you've ever read through Phil Steele's mag, it's chock full of information. And if you, you know, dive into each conference, there's going to be three-way ties, four-way ties. He's not afraid to do that. So it did kind of pop to me that he has them solely in first in his eyes. He has them number one. He has UTSA two. He has Tulane three. And what's interesting is he's pretty low, I would say, compared to the market on Navy and Army.
I took note of that as well.
He has Navy, I don't believe in his, I think he has them like way down at like 48 or 50, somewhere in that, in his top 25. So he had Memphis 27th. This isn't his power poll. This is his ranking. So a little bit different, right, how he kind of projects it out. But this is what he had to say of Memphis in his 2025 synopsis. He said, the Tigers have been in three of the last eight AAC title games. In 23, Memphis went 10-3 with a seven-point loss to Missouri, four-point loss to SMU. The Tigers are 63-12 in their last 11 years in the Liberty Bowl. Last year, Seth Hennigan back. They were the preseason favorite for a G5 playoff spot. I'd have to double-check that. I don't know if they were the favorite, but regardless, they were high up there. But I pointed out that their three toughest games in the AAC were on the road. Memphis beat Florida State, lost to Navy, shouts to Super Spot of the Year, and later at UTSA and did not make the title game, but finished a super 11-2. This year, they lose their four-year quarterback and most skilled players, but the schedule is more manageable, and they have the most NIL money of any in the AAC, and hence the best roster. They get their three toughest foes, USF, Navy, Tulane, all at home.
And they do not play UTSA, I believe.
That is correct.
So they avoid who his number two team is in the league. They will get Tulane at home. New Orleans has been a house of horrors for the Tigers, but they've had decent success playing the Green Wave here in Memphis. And then he has, to your point, Phil's not afraid to do a four-way tie. He's got a four-way tie between USF, Navy, and Army for the fourth spot in the league.
And they don't play Army either.
Correct. I don't know. It is one of those things where it's like you start to look at their schedule, and as Tim has pointed out, he's reversing on Memphis with a super spot of the year, where I believe Memphis is going to get Arkansas in a
great spot.
Quite the sandwich spot.
Tasty. Ole Miss, September 13th. Notre Dame, September 27th at home. Like, my Notre Dame fan brethren are terrified of that game. As I sneeze.
It happens to the best of us.
And they get Memphis gets Arkansas at home. And we'll talk to Colin Wilson later on the show, who is super woo pig suey, and he is not high on his Hogs this year. And I think that is a very tricky spot for Arkansas. I think it's a great spot for Memphis. Yeah, and you get USF, Tulane, Navy all at home. You get Navy off a bye. Now, Navy's coming off a bye, too, on Thanksgiving night, but that was the one thing, and I remember talking to you about it, was the schedule last year. When you looked at it,
yep.
You're like, wait, they got to go to Tulane. They got to go to UTSA.
They really screwed it up. So Laird Veach is now the AD at Missouri. They requested from the league to make the league home schedule bad because they were anticipating, which I would always argue was so dumb. The next construction project, I guess outside of Vegas, you're used to construction projects largely finishing on time, but outside of Vegas, the next construction project to finish on time will be the first, at least in my lifetime. And they were trying to build up to this season and debuting their brand new stadium. Spoiler alert, that will not be happening. And so because of that, their schedule was heavily tilted to the road. And really, like, that's the thing. They just needed to flip one of the games. Like, they didn't have to beat both UTSA and Navy. Although I contend if that Tulane game would have been win or go in, like, I think Ryan Silverfield and the Tigers had the advantage.
It was a good spot to play
it was,
Tulane.
Exactly, because everything was wrapped up. Although I do think they're playing.
No, I think Tulane would have hosted if they had won that game.
Yeah, because
right?
I think they were going to be higher in the rankings.
Yeah.
So there was something to play for, but like that's just the classic, the team coming in on a short week just with energy, and also Tulane was cold.
Well, and I gave you credit because you were all over
Tulane Army. Against Army next week because I saw the forecast. I was like, oh yeah, that's a cold spot, and that is not a cold weather team. You have to know what those look for. I don't know. I mean, I think it's where,
because it goes against conventional wisdom for a G5 team where you lose your quarterback who'd been there forever.
Yep.
You lose what, your top seven tacklers, and this team is projected to win the conference.
Well, and then on top of that, they also have this weird, what are they going to do at quarterback? They bring in the guy from Nevada, but they've got, you know, you've got Antoine waiting in the wings, and he's the biggest like quarterback prospect they've ever had. But it's like, how are you also going to juggle that?
So what, you know, when you look at the odds, and shocking, I'm going to make this surround betting a little bit. I'm now a little bit more intrigued to maybe take a little shot on Memphis, because I don't feel like, at least from the betting standpoint, that they're getting a ton of love out there. So right now at DraftKings, Memphis is the fourth shot to win the conference. It's Tulane plus 260, Navy plus 380, Army plus 450, and then Memphis. So, look, I'm not saying Phil Steele's the gospel. He's very good. He's got a track record. I love my guy, Brett Ciancia, who does pick six previews. I think he does a really good job, but he just sticks to the Power Four conferences. But, man, looking at the schedule, I'm kind of intrigued by taking a little shot on Memphis, knowing the schedule is as advantageous as it is. And then I'll give you this real quickly. So he's pretty high, Phil is, on Boise State. Boise State, he has coming in at number 15 in his preseason top 25. They are the betting favorite to represent the group of five in the playoff again. I think last check of the odds, they were like plus 190. But then he's got Toledo at 25. And the next time Jason Candle wins all the games he's supposed to win will be the first time.
Correct.
They'll probably beat like Kentucky week one or something like that, because that's what Toledo does. And then he's got Memphis. Like, Memphis is his third best G5 team, followed by James Madison, and then, you know, Liberty, UTSA, San Jose State are all kind of clumped in together there. But yeah, his outlook on Memphis was higher than I expected. This is impressive. This is what he said in his top 25 write-up. He said, last year the Tigers were the preseason favorite, as mentioned, blah, blah, blah. And he said, three toughest home games, and 58-11 at home over the last 10 years.
You know, we've talked about how good week one's going to be. I totally forgot we've got Boise going to South Florida on that Thursday night.
It's a weird game. 5:30 Eastern kick, too, so it can be on ESPN. That's going to be hot. And I'll say this, too. I don't know. I don't think we've talked about it. I think one of the more underrated games, I think we talked about it last week, is Baylor hosting
Auburn.
It's a really good game. I had a college football handicapper, Paul Stone, on my podcast last week, and that was one of his favorite plays. He took the points of Baylor. Felt like they should be favored.
Well, there's also that weird reality of, like, I don't love Boise going to Tampa at 5:30 Eastern, but that's also where thunderstorms will come up.
Yeah.
And so, like, that game could get delayed till 9 p.m., and then all of a sudden, like, that changes it for me.
Boise's one of those teams where I'm like, you know, they did lose the greatest player in school history, and they lost a defensive lineman that went to the NFL. But is it a situation kind of like Memphis where they've just got so much more money than everyone out there? They're so much more talented than anyone in the Mountain West. And to be honest, like, the Mountain West is pretty underwhelming this year. It's like,
what do
we expect from UNLV? They were good last year, but they lost their coach. They lost a lot of pieces. They've got new quarterbacks. Like, they brought in the kid from UVA, Calandria. They brought in Orgy from Michigan. Like, what are they going to do at quarterback? So I just want to point this out real quick. So Phil also does his rankings for each unit, right?
Yep. Each position group, yeah.
The quarterback one's pretty interesting, right? How much we've talked about the quarterbacks this year. And think about it this way. He's got Alabama at 36th. He's got Notre Dame at 64th. Those are two of the top eight favorites to win the national championship. So my point is, If Alabama and or Notre Dame hit on quarterback this year, I think they both have a chance to win the national championship.
Yeah, I'm definitely there. You know more about Notre Dame than I do. I'm definitely there on Alabama. I've talked myself into Alabama's kind of in a good spot where everyone's not really thinking about them that much.
I think, like, someone asked me the other day, they had, like, a free bet, like, whatever, $10 free bet. Yeah. He's like, hey, who should I bet? And I said, current odds, I would go Alabama or Clemson. They're both, like, 15, 16 to 1. So if you just run it down, Alabama has, outside of quarterback, 7th best running back room, 4th best wide receiver room, this per Phil Steele. They have the 9th best offensive line. Defensive line, he has them at 6. Linebackers, he has them at 10. DBs, he has them at 2. So everything but the quarterback is in place. And I don't know, Kalen DeBoer's got a pretty decent track record of cultivating quarterbacks.
And Grubb's back with him.
And look, I mean, horrific story regarding, I believe it was his twin, the freshman they got, the Alabama freshman quarterback, whose name is escaping me right now.
Oh, gosh.
Keelan, it's, hold on, I'm getting it right now. Keelan Russell. I mean, I watched some highlights of that kid, and I know it's a true freshman. That dude's a baller. Like, if that kid...
Yeah, but you could also, I'm telling you, you could talk me into Ty Simpson's McElroy.
Maybe. I mean, that's the thing about Alabama this year, why I think I'm pretty intrigued. I think it's the point that you made, which is, oh, Saban, look at what they are now. And I'm like, you do realize that the coach that you're now saying can't do it was the coach that 2 years ago you're like, this guy, where did he come from? This guy's a genius. And now he's got his safety net in Ryan Grubb, to your point, back as his offensive coordinator where he did not have him last year. The talent's there. And look, the quarterback is the ultimate position, as we all know. But if they can hit with Ty Simpson or whoever, man, that team is pretty loaded.
What is he? Do you have LSU's pulled up?
Yeah. What do you want from LSU?
How does he rank? Go through the position group rankings for LSU.
Quarterback number 2. So he has his quarterback
is units. Cade 1.
Clemson 1, LSU 2, Texas 3. A little strong there, in my opinion, but I understand the fascination. Penn State 4, South Carolina 5. How about this?
I think South Carolina is the top of I'm ready to fade them.
He's got Georgia Tech 6.
So you and I were talking about this when we did our off-season rankings.
And I think a lot of it has to do with Aaron Filo as the backup.
The problem with Haynes is the way that Haynes plays, like you're always... Like, remember we saw last year, remember Haynes went down for a couple of weeks? And it's like, if you got Georgia Tech without Haynes King, like that team was terrible.
Oh, Notre Dame smashed him.
But because he just has to run... I mean, they're essentially running the option. It's just asking so much of him to stay healthy for a whole year.
All right, here's LSU. So, 2 at quarterback, 12 at running back, 3 at wide receiver, 43 offensive line. That's not good.
And they lost, the 4th pick in the draft?
22 defensive line, 11 linebacker, and defensive back, he has them... Wow, you don't usually have to go into receiving votes for LSU's DBs, 28th. So he's kind of all over the place on LSU.
I don't know. I'm not there yet. Like I
you're not there yet on what?
LSU. Because there's so many people that are convinced to me that they are going to be, they're going to, like, we could look up in November and they're the best team in the league.
Where did he have LSU's linebackers again?
I think he said
11th.
Yeah.
Okay, that's probably not right. I was thinking that Perkins, because he's going to be coming back, and he's an absolute monster.
He is,
but he struggled at playing.
They put him at the wrong position.
They played him like they wanted him kind of inside, but now it's like, just put him on the edge, man. He's a freaking stud. Like, just let him
he's
go.
He's awesome. Just let him go to work.
But if Harold Perkins,
he is coming off that knee injury.
This is what Phil Steele said about the LSU linebackers. If Harold Perkins recaptures his pre-injury 23 form, 75 tackles, 13 TFLs. LSU will end 25 even higher. He's an athletic terror when healthy. Whit Weeks emerged as one of the game's top linebackers in 24 with 125 tackles and 10 TFLs. And Devon Keyes' strong finish earned him more reps. So that's why he has him there at number 11.
The only reason the only thing I'll say about Weeks is Weeks got a lot of tackles because everybody ran right at him. There was not a lot of faith in him. He's one of those guys that, like, the stats kind of lied.
So the one thing and that I always like, I immediately turn to when I get Phil's preview magazine is his surprise teams. He does he grades himself. You know, he's had certainly some bad years with anticipating who's gonna, you know, have big years. But I'm always curious because he has a pretty good formula of, you know, who's gonna bounce back and whatnot. So his number one surprise team, and he said his surprise team. He goes, since I started writing this article, there have only been four teams that were not in the preseason AP top 10 that have won the national championship. All four of those teams are on my surprise team list. So his surprise team for him is a non-top 10 team that he thinks has a decent shot to make the playoff. His number one surprise team is?
The number one surprise. So it's going to be outside of the top 10.
That he thinks he can make the playoff and maybe a run to the title.
All right, so a run to the title. Is it going to be Michigan?
It's got Oklahoma.
There's a lot of buzz with Oklahoma because there's a lot of people that think they rebuilt the roster like Ole Miss did last year. My biggest problem is I'm just not sold on Mateer.
I got my questions about Mateer. That's why I've kind of zagged, and I think I've told you, the Mountain West transfer that I'm all in on is Devin Dampier, who's at Utah. Same situation. Offensive coordinator comes with him. I just think Utah, easier conference.
Yes.
And I look at him as an explosive athlete. Now, not as good of a passer as Mateer. This is what Phil Steele said on Oklahoma and why they are his number one surprise team. He said, ironically, it was an Oklahoma team that inspired this article way back when. Oklahoma's off a 6-7 season and will not be in anyone's top 10 except for mine. As I type this, I estimate the Sooners will open the year at number 24, but my magazine does have some influence, so they could grab the top 20. Phil's a big believer in himself, and I understand why. Nothing was wrong with the Sooners' defense last year except it got left on the field too long. They held foes to 96 yards per game, below their average. Last year, they lost all five starters on the O-line, and they had five O-linemen get injured and started seven different lineups. The wide receiver core was devastated by injuries, at one point missing its top five wide receivers. But those units are vastly improved, and they...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.